Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Tom Dempsey, and he'll be answering your questions on sight fishing for redfish. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Tom a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill out the form on the right side of our homepage, and we'll let you know when the next live show will be. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. You can also find it on any of the podcast sites like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. So if you have to leave early, you can return to your website or any of the podcast platforms at your convenience and listen to the recording at any time. If you're out and about on Facebook, Instagram, or X, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd share our podcast. And when you do, use the hashtag AskAboutFlyFishing and hashtag FlyFishing. In fact, if you have a moment, do it right now while you're listening to the show. That'd be great. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. When we return, we'll be talking with Tom Dempsey about sight fishing for redfish. The Colorado River at Lee's Ferry is called by some the world's largest spring creek. It's a massive, clear-running tailwater fishery that runs 15.5 miles from the base of the Glen Canyon Dam to the upper reaches of the Grand Canyon. At times, it gives the impression of being not one or two, but a series of parallel spring creek-like waterways. The fishing is great, and the scenery is gorgeous. Lee's Ferry Anglers provides professional guide service to this outstanding rainbow trout fishery, as well as food and lodging at Cliff Dwellers Restaurant and Lodge. See for yourself why Lee's Ferry is on every fly fisher's must-do list. Visit leesferryanglers.com or call them at 800-962-9755. That's 800-962-9755. Before we introduce Tom, we'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Tom's section that says Register for our Free Drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a book courtesy of Stackpole Books. I have quite a few books here from Stackpole, and if you're the winner tonight, you'll get to pick from the list of books, and a book will be yours. So here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question will be about something that Tom and I talk about during the show. You must submit your answer along with your name and your location using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely. Take notes, pay attention, type fast when I ask the question, and maybe you'll be the proud winner of a Stackpole book. Our guest tonight is Tom Dempsey. Tom is an orthopedic surgeon by profession and a fly fisherman by passion. Tom moved from North Carolina more than 35 years ago to Mobile, Alabama, where he developed a quest to sight cast for redfish along the Gulf Coast. He is an FFI certified casting instructor, a former member of the FFI Board of Directors and the FFI Membership Committee, casting director for the FFI Gulf Coast Counselor, and three local fly fishing clubs. He founded the Gulf Coast Fly Fishing School 8 years ago in Mobile, which has instructors in Mobile, New Orleans, Nashville, Atlanta, Pensacola, and Key West, giving over 200 lessons a year. He has fished in more than 30 countries, but his one special love is reds in shallow water. Tom, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thank you very much.
Well, good to have you tonight. You're fresh off a trip to Brazil, right, for peacock bass?
I am really fresh off of a trip to the Biloxi Marsh, where we caught redfish today.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You didn't even take a nap in between those trips, did you?
No, we did Argentina in January, Brazil in February, for 18th straight year, and as soon as you get home, you start looking at the weather, to go out and chase some of these redfish. I was out yesterday and today, and we'll probably go Saturday too.
Nice, nice. Well, tell me how you got started. Like you said, you moved from South Carolina, and did you get interested in redfish when in Alabama, or were you interested?
Well, kind of. Back in the old days, the pharmaceutical companies and medical instrument companies could take you fishing. And, of course, the federal government doesn't allow you to do that anymore. Well, I was by myself in private practice, and I would get invited every year to go fishing in Alaska. And I didn't go because I had to run the office. And one year, the girls in my office said, if you don't go this year, we're going to close the office anyway, so you might as well go. So I went, and I'd never fly fished before. I was standing out on the deck, and I had a friend that owned Choo Choo Fly Fishing in Chattanooga, and I said, Hugh, how do you do this? He said, well, you move your arm forward and backwards and stop it. And about that time, Bruce Johnson, who owned the camp, came up and he said, if you don't know how to do it now, by the end of the week, you will. You'll be doing it 14 hours a day. So I got into fly fishing then, and it sort of corresponded with the time that we were relocating to Alabama, and we wanted to be on the water because I like to fish, and one of my friends took me first to the area that we fish. We call it the Biloxi Marsh, and he took me redfish, and I was intrigued by first the fishing and by the number of fish we saw down there, and after that, it was all history.
That was it, huh? You got the bug. Yeah, yeah. Well,
the
good.
The bug has never gone away.
It hasn't gone away, huh?
No.
Well, what makes fly fishing for redfish unique compared to, you know, other types of fly fishing? Because obviously you fished all over the world for many types of fish. What makes it unique?
Well, what makes it unique is the fact that, number one, we can do it year-round down here because we're not limited by weather. Number two, redfish can be very fickle. And one of the things about catching redfish is being able to figure out really how to feed them. And you have to feed redfish. You don't just throw at them and drag a fly across their face. You have to feed them. You have to talk to them. You have to baby them. And I think the noted tarpon fisherman Andy Mills said a redfish to him was the hardest fish he ever had to catch. And they can be very cooperative, or they can look at you and blink their eye and they're gone. But catching them in crystal clear water with a fly that you've tied and watching the fly disappear, and when it disappears, you know where it is. It's in his mouth. And then fighting the fish and landing him, patting him on the head, taking a picture, and letting him go is the thrill of it.
Sounds exciting. Sounds exciting.
It is very exciting. When my friends from up north come down and we take them fishing, their eyeballs come out on stalks. They've never seen anything like that.
What's, you know, for a first-timer going out looking for redfish, what's the chances of getting one, considering that they're so fickle?
Well, they're not. I mean, they can be fickle, but if you're in the right place at the right time, generally you can hook up. You don't have to throw an 80-foot cast. Catching redfish requires you to do some things that are sort of unique to fishing. First, redfish, if you look at them, always looking down. And one of the common errors that people make is they fish them in the wrong water column. So if I have someone on my boat who has never caught a redfish before, they can cast 40 feet. Oftentimes I'll see a fish crawling along the bank, and I'll say, I want you to cast 15 feet in front of this fish and don't move it. And I'll tell you when to strip it because they're looking down. And they're not like trout that look up and hit things on top, although they will hit a popper. And then if the student will listen, generally they can hook up.
Okay.
A lot of people, and I do it too, we get what is called buck fever. We're too excited to hook the fish, and we either strip it too fast or we hit the fish or where you throw it the wrong end of the fish. And it's all about being in the right place at the right time for them.
Okay. What are some of the best locations for redfish in the U.S.?
Well, we sort of spoiled on the coast here. We used to joke that the fish they catch around Savannah and down in Florida, we use those for live bait. Those are, and because they like to compare their fish. But I think the best red fishing actually is in and around Louisiana and to the east in what we call the Biloxi Marsh, which is actually a part of the marsh of Louisiana, but because of boundaries, they call it the Biloxi Marsh. It's about 14 miles offshore, and it's very shallow water going out, not more than about 10 feet deep. And once you get out there, 650 square miles of fishable land, and you don't see anybody else. We didn't see a single boat today but us. I've caught them all the way up to the Chesapeake, and they actually are found from New Hampshire all the way down to Mexico. But traditionally, the best place is the eastern coast of Florida, and there's some fishing along the western coast, not as good. All along the Florida area around Pensacola, coming over under Mobile, over to Biloxi, and to Louisiana. Now, the ones over in Louisiana, south of New Orleans, the water's a little different over there. So the fish can look a little different. They're a little bit different to catch them because our water is the first water that's clear because the Yucatan brings up sand, and the beaches are white over in Alabama, and the bottoms are very clear. Today, it was like a bathtub. You could see down probably 6 feet. And I think that's one of the things that makes it unique here. Also, It doesn't get a lot of pressure because people just don't like to run over 14 miles of open water in a skiff to fish. They want a bay boat or a bigger boat. But to access the fish that we fish, the big fish that we fish, you've got to have a boat that will go in skinny water.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Roy Fukushima in Orange County, California, is asking about, can you compare redfish sight fishing in Alabama to the Laguna Madre in Texas? Are you familiar with that fishery?
I have. I fish that area over there. That's a real shallow area over there. It's not as clear as it is over here. They fish a lot of tailing fish over there where you see the tails sticking up out of the water and wagging. Their fish are not as big as our fish. Their fish are more silver colored over there. Ours are gold colored. And they develop a blue tail around Christmas time. And oftentimes when you're looking for them, you'll see the blue tail in the water before you see anything else. And as you get further over towards Florida, the fish become a little more brown and then they turn silver colored too. But I think ours are more brilliant colored over here. But you fish them kind of the same way, but we fish them with bigger flies and bigger hooks over here than they do in Laguna Madre.
So is the area you're fishing that you like there, are there larger quantities of fish as well as larger fish than some of these other areas?
I would say yes. I fish down in Tampa Bay, and they say a good day in Tampa Bay is one 18-inch fish on a 15-foot leader with 300 cars in the parking lot. And they just get a lot of pressure. You go down close to Everglades City, now you can find them down there, too, and around Cedar Key and Dean Hatchie and areas over there, and I fished those when I lived in Gainesville, Florida. But that water is not as clear as it is over here because it continuously flushes in the Gulf area.
Okay. Now, you said earlier that you fish all year round where you are down in Alabama. And what are some of the best times of year to fish for redfish? And also, Joe in Pennsylvania was asking specifically about winter months, January, February, and March. So can you kind of give us a plan?
If you could fish 1 month out of the year for redfish, it'd be November, because the weather's stable. It's not terribly cold, and the redfish spawn from, if you read the literature, they say August to October. No, they spawn from August to December, and so they're hungry during that time. And if you could pick 1 month, November. Okay. After they spawn, January, February, March, it's a little different fishery because they've spawned and they've gotten that out of their system, and now they're hungry again. And the fish tend to be a little bit leaner too during that time. But I mean, like today, we're at the middle part of February. I caught a 28-pound redfish, 38 inches long, and that was a big fat fish. One of the things that happens after Christmas in the spring is that it's a little more unpredictable, the weather. Like, we had a cold front about 3 or 4 days ago, and there were areas where you didn't see any bait fish at all. So if you don't see any bait fish, you're probably not going to see any redfish, because they'll move out, and once the water warms up a little bit, they'll come back. And also, you get an algae bloom toward the end of February into March, and it can be a little bit cloudy, the water. And because when you're sight casting, you're depending on basically two things: good sun and clear water. Everything else doesn't matter. You can have some wind, but you've got to have the sun and you've got to have the clear water.
Right, that makes total sense. Listen, Tom, we got to take a quick break here, but I'll be right back. And when we get back, we'll continue on talking about redfish. So hang tight. I'll be right back. The Ugly Bug Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming has been serving fly fishers in Wyoming and around the world since 1983. Their selection of top-of-the-line gear and a huge assortment of flies is one of the best in the land. All products are available in their fly shop and online. Looking for advice? Just give them a call, and their expert professional staff will help you with whatever you need. Visit the Ugly Bug Fly Shop today at uglybugflyshop.com or call them at 866-845-9284. Again, it's the uglybugflyshop.com or call them at 866-845-9284. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Tom Dempsey about sight fishing for redfish. If you'd like to ask Tom a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your questions immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them on the show tonight. So, Tom, when you're not on the water and you're not teaching lessons, what else are you doing in your fly fishing world?
Well, tie flies, when you're buying them for $6 a piece, you learn real quick how to tie them. So I tie a lot of flies. We participate in a lot of events. We donate a lot of lessons, participate in the Casting for Recovery, which is a breast cancer survivor, ladies. We volunteer for that, and we volunteer to help the Boy Scouts. And anybody who's a student who wants to take lessons, we give them a freebie. And
Okay.
we're more interested in getting people interested in the sport than anything else. So we try to promote that. We have an active website, which is Gulf Coast Fly Fishing School. And you can go there, and it has a preference page on the back, because I never send anybody to fish anywhere or with anybody unless I know personally who's going to guide them, or if I've been there, because there's so much competition with the recreational dollar out there. It behooves people to check around before they commit.
It sounds like you're actively involved, and you're involved in the clubs as well, right?
I'm a member of three clubs, one in Pensacola, one in the Mobile area, and one in Ocean Springs. Actually, I'm four, because I joined the New Orleans Club too. One of my good friends is president of the Southern Council portion of the Federation of Fly Fishermen. So actually, I'm in four, and we try to jiggle back and forth. I'm sort of the casting director in three of them, and we offer lessons to our members of the club before we have our regular meetings on once a month. So we'll target some tasks like distance casting, accuracy casting, whatever, and that's done on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's kind of a commitment to teaching and to try to help people along. Because I always tell the students, there's always someone better and there's always someone worse. And we all started at the same place in fly fishing. The main thing is to have fun.
Now, you said, what is the URL for your Gulf Coast Fly Fishing School?
That's your website? Yeah, it's our website. And we have a Facebook and a page, too. And my son, who you already had a run-in with, he started calling me as soon as we got off the water today, wanting some pictures to put them on Instagram. He likes to, and we encourage all our students, if they catch a fish, send it to us, and we'll put it on the page, because people like to see the, what I call the grip and grin pictures.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, so your actual website address is GulfCoastFlyFishingSchool.com. So folks, if you want to contact Tom, he's there, email addresses, phone numbers, and so forth. Now, Tom, do you do any speaking at clubs, like guest speaking?
Oh, yeah. We had a meeting last night over in Ocean Springs, and they wanted me to talk to them about leaders. And we do a lot of teaching, too. I've taught down in Crystal River a number of times, Crystal River, Florida, up in the Cullowhee, North Carolina, Western Carolina, up in Georgia, New Orleans, Somerset, New Jersey. And we have kind of a program that I like to run our clubs through during the year. We'll give a program on how to remove fish hooks. We'll give a program on how to construct leaders, program on fish identification. We try to vary our programs a lot. People don't get much out of someone speaking about their adventure going to the Pinoy in Russia. They want to hear what's going on locally. We use local talent to get a lot of our speakers because those are the people they're going to go with. And we want people to use the local talent around here. So we bring in a lot of the local guides and the local people. One of our best shows, we brought in a chef who talked to people about how to fix seafood. And I mm-hmm. thought that was kind of unique. But they all aren't just, my fishing trip to, the Delaware River in New Mexico or whatever. Those things, people don't get too much out of that. Yeah. But we try to make everything a learning experience. And we try to make it interesting.
And
we have
what
a lot of handouts,
about.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. That's what we're all about here on Ask About Fly Fishing, is trying to help people learn more about what they can use, out there fly fishing. So let's get at it. Let's start talking about these redfish again. You talked about a couple of different habitats so far for redfish. What are the ideal habitats, where are we going to find redfish?
Okay. Of course, redfish can live in saltwater or freshwater. But they can't reproduce in freshwater. But they can live in freshwater. They can live anywhere. They're tough. The ideal location for redfish, if I was out looking, I like a gradual sloping bank. Why? Okay, they feel protected there. Otherwise, they get hemmed up against a chop bank by a porpoise. And so they don't like a drop-off in the bank. They like relatively clear water, although you can find them in muddy water, because they use sight a lot to eat. And the perfect bottom would be a few shells scattered around, a little bit of grass here and there, not a lot of puffy mud, and no algae. Now, if you fish around South Carolina, they fish them in the grass there. And they have to use weed guards and all that sort of stuff. My daughter lives in Charleston. I go fishing up there. But they're kind of a different deal up there. But the ideal to me, sloping bank, shells on the bottom, clear water, that's it. And that's one of the reasons this Biloxi Marsh area that we fish is so good, because it's anywhere from 2 inches to 3 feet.
Oh, wow. So that
And
sounds
that's,
like it makes it good for sight fishing, then.
Oh, it is. It's the best sight fishing I've ever seen. And I've been to a lot of different places. And people say, oh, gosh, you fished all over the world. What's your favorite fish? What's your favorite location? I said, right here.
Right there.
I said, right here,
Home
right here
waters,
on the Gulf
huh?
Coast.
Yeah,
I said,
yeah.
and it is. It continues to be. And the fishing is just as good now as it was when I moved to the Mobile almost 30 years ago.
Really? Really? It's maintained its health.
Well, the federal government, George Bush signed it, I think, in maybe 87, I don't know. Anyway, he signed a proclamation that prevented the commercial sale of redfish in federal waters. And everybody remembers when blackened redfish over in New Orleans was the way to go. But, I mean, you could put blackening on your shoe and eat it, and it would taste like a redfish. And they almost decimated the population of redfish on the Gulf Coast. Well, when they passed, you don't net them anymore, and they got rid of the gill nets and all that sort of stuff. They made a tremendous comeback, just like the stripers did in Chesapeake Bay, when people started realizing that that's a resource that we can't mess that one up. So it's good. It's good.
Good, good. Glad to hear that. Not that way everywhere.
Well, you know, they have different limits and different size limits in all the states on the Gulf Coast, which doesn't make any sense. You know, why you have a limit of 5 redfish in Louisiana and 1 in Florida and 3 in Alabama. I mean, the fish don't know when they cross the state line. So that's one of the things we're trying to work on now, is get some consistency there with that. But I think that's just kind of an ongoing conservation deal.
Can you discuss the importance of tides with redfish behavior? Or does it affect them?
Well, we have one tide in Alabama, and as opposed to, you know, two tides around Charleston, Savannah and all. So fishing the tides around here is not that important, because a big swing in the tide here may be 10 inches, whereas
oh,
in
wow.
Charleston
yeah.
it may be 4 feet. They do like a little moving water, because they'll sit out in these what we call ponds with the marsh grass, and the little streams, little rivers that run into them, and they'll sit out there and wait for the fish to come. So fishing them on a rising tide or falling tide, it's probably not a bad idea, but truthfully, I haven't noticed that much difference. Whether it's falling tide, I mean, today we had almost no water out there. And, you know, fish were there. They didn't care. And especially redfish. They don't care about anything except eating.
Now, did they, speaking of eating, I kind of got the impression that they're after bait fish, or are they fish? Are they feeding on crustaceans? And
it depends on the age and the location. When they're little, and by year one, they will attain a length of about 11 or 12 inches, and they don't reproduce until they get 3 to 5 years old, and that's about 24 inches, and that's one of the reasons they put a slot in, that you had to let fish go over 25 inches, and because those are spawning fish. But if you look and see what they're eating, if you cut their stomach open and look what they're eating, they'll eat anything. They'll eat a beer can if you throw at them. But they prefer little crustaceans, that's true. And one of the ways to find them, you'll see a lot of skates and stingrays out there, and their wings flop up and down, and they disturb the bottom, and little crustaceans come up. So whenever you see stingrays and skates, you'll generally find redfish. They'll eat about anything. They eat worms, they eat croakers, they'll eat each other, little ones. As they get bigger, they eat bigger fish. I had one I opened one time that had a 12-inch mullet in its stomach. I went, wow. But their mouths are big. They can get them in there. But they'll eat pretty much anything.
Yeah, you mentioned following the skates or the stingrays. I noticed that, you know, we found the same thing happening down in Belize with Permit. Permit will follow those skates
Absolutely.
around. Yeah, yeah. Doing the same thing. Making it easy on themselves, right?
Well, redfish don't like to work very hard, neither do Permit. And if you look at Permit, you know, they just like redfish, they're looking down. They're looking to see what's on the bottom.
Right.
And that's how you catch Permit, with, you know, crab flies that are on the bottom.
Right. Yep.
You don't
yep.
just strip in front of their face at light speed. They don't go after that sort of stuff. They don't want to work hard. They don't chase stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about gear for a few minutes. Roy Fukushima in California asked about, you know, what weight rod and what specific fly lines are you using?
The go-to rod is an 8 foot, is an 8-way rod. There's not a redfish in the Gulf Coast that can beat you on an 8-way rod. Plus, if you're out there hacking a 10-weight all day, you're going to wear your arm out. You don't need a big rod. A lot of people overfish. Okay, 8-way rod, tip flex, because generally going to have a little wind, so you want to be able to deliver it quickly. The line, we fish in shallow water, you want a floating line. You don't need a sinking line. These weight forward lines like outbound and bass lines are great because you're going to throw big flies. You want warm water lines. You don't need cold water lines. Even in today, we didn't need a cold water line. They just turn into a slinky when you get them out there. You want to, the color of it doesn't make any difference. Fish can't tell color anyway. And your leaders, most people fish with too light a leader. Tapered leaders are fine, commercially tapered leaders. I make mine. I'll go buy a big spool of Andy 40, 30, and 20, and my go-to leader is 4 feet, 40 pound, and 2.5 feet, 30 pound, because I'm not going to lose one because I break him off. He ain't going to break that. And you want something that's big enough that's going to turn over a big fly. Now, most of the guides will fish their clients with smaller flies than what I use. But if you look at a redfish in his mouth, he's got a big jawbone. And most of the fish that get lost, that hook doesn't go around the jawbone or it doesn't penetrate. And it gets down to your gear again. Use the best hooks you can get, chemically sharpened. And people don't understand what chemically sharpened means. It means if you go out and plow the field, that's what, generally how the surface looks on a hook that's not chemically sharpened. If it's chemically sharpened, you plow the field, then you bring a cultivator over it and drag it until it's absolutely smooth. And they use chemicals to do that. And all of them aren't the same. Probably the two best hooks I think are on the market are Owners and Gammacoxie. I use off-center hooks because you get a better hookup rate, and I use needle points. You think about a triangle-shaped hook is sharp on three sides. As a fish wiggles its head back and forth and back and forth, what does it do? It cuts a hole, so you might lose a fish because it throws the hook that way. With a needle point, it goes straight in. And so there's no skimping on the hooks. Flies, you can use anything you like. And that's true. And because they're not particular. We fish with four or five different colors today. And I have one I tie. I call it the Terminator. And it's kind of a reddish fly with a bunch of sparkle in it. And they love it. And it's different. If you go fish in South Carolina, they use a lot of muted colors up there. And I took some of my flies up, and they said, man, this thing's going to hit that. You know, I said, watch. And I said, they've never seen this before. This looks like T-bone steak to them. And they'll eat them. It's not about imitation. It's about presentation. That's the most important thing about catching redfish, is not what your fly looks like, but where you put it and where they're eating. And if they're not eating, you can throw Chateaubriand at them, and they're not going to eat it. And if they're eating, one day it hit beside the fish, and he turned around and went back and got it. And that's what redfish will do sometimes. I had one of my buddies who was fishing with me the other week, and we saw his fish sitting up on the sand. Its head was sticking up, dorsal fin, tail. He cast, and the fish just kind of looked at him. I cast the same thing. Then we both cast at the same time. There was an explosion. I said, somebody foul hooked it. No, the fish ate both flies at the same time. I've never had that happen. I almost went out and bought a lottery ticket after that. But I got a great picture of two flies in the mouth at the same time. So they're unpredictable sometimes. That's one of the things that makes it so interesting in sight casting. Casting to a fish that's moving with a fly that you tied and watching him come take it, man, there's no bigger thrill than that.
Right, right. Well, with that said, we'll come back and talk more about flies because we do have some questions about them. But I need to take a quick break, and I'll do that, and we'll be right back. Enrico Puglisi flies pride themselves with creating unique and one-of-a-kind flies and fly tying material. Enrico has been experimenting with durable synthetic and natural materials to create flies that catch fish for more than 30 years. His innovative products, including brushes, fibers, and components, have made a major impact on the direction of saltwater fly fishing, and his methods and materials are respected worldwide. Whether you want your flies hand-tied for you or you'd like to tie your own, be sure to visit Enrico Puglisi Flies and browse their online catalog. Visit epflies.com and do a little shopping today. Again, that's epflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Tom Dempsey about sight fishing for redfish. If you'd like to ask Tom a question, go to our homepage and fill out that form and send your question in. And we'll try to get it answered tonight on the show. Let me just check in there. Okay, here's a good question that's on target for what we've been talking about. Tom Phil in Kentucky, he said, do redfish tend to forage individually or in groups? If you do see a group of redfish, is it easier or harder to catch one?
Well, that is a good question because you see lots of times singles, and then you'll see doubles, then you'll see big pods. Sometimes the pods are, gosh, half as big as a football field. And the ones that are moving at a brisk speed, they're kind of like the Blues Brothers. They're on a mission. You're not going to catch one of those guys. The ones that are sort of milling around, you have a better chance because then you throw a fly in there, they compete, and I'm going to get it before this guy gets it. The ones that got their heads buried in the mud with their tails sticking up are the ideal ones because they're rooting around looking for something. And if you can sneak up on one and drop a fly in front of his face, that's almost a slam dunk. But you see them in, you know, all kinds of situations, big schools, little schools, singles, doubles, whatever. You would try to pick off the ones on the outside if you could. And the best shot you're going to get at a redfish is when they come head on towards you. And instead of stripping it across their face, because they don't chase down things much. So, again, a straight on shot where you're standing on the front of your skiff, you see them coming and dropping it at the appropriate place, and the appropriate place can be on their nose or be in front of them. And that's one of the things you kind of figure out once you get out there, because they may be hitting flies close to their face today, and next week you throw it in front of their face like that and they spook off, and you have to throw in front of them 10 or 15 feet and let them swim over it and then strip it to them. And the strip for redfish is a bump, 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 2 inches, 2 inches, 2 inches, 2 inches. And when you see you get his attention, you can bump it a few more times and then stop. But the long strips don't work for redfish unless you want to foul hook one. But mm-hmm. You have to cast at the right end of the fish. They don't eat with the back end.
They
and,
don't.
And I've thrown it at before, and I could tell you they don't eat what they eat.
Well, they got the eye on that end, don't they?
They do have an eye on that end. Sometimes they have a lot of eyes. So you have to get. That's one of the advantages of me being up on the polling platform. I could say wrong end of the fish, throw the other end. Oh, okay.
So they grow those spots just to confuse fly fishers. Is that right?
I think they do. I think they kind of mess up your mind. I think a lot of fish do that. If we knew the answer to all that question, we'd catch a fish every time we went out.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's talk more about flies. You kind of brushed that off and said, hey, you know, any fly will work, but I'm sure there's some go-to patterns, and I'd like to know more about, you know, what those are, whether they're crabs, whether they're streamers, whether they're flousers, you know, what shrimp, what are you, the patterns you use most commonly?
Again, they will pretty much bite anything you throw into their strike zone if they're hungry. I use a lot of streamers because, and I use big flies too. I'll use them sometimes 6 inches long or 8 inches long for them. But they'll hit a little fly too. Ones with eyes on them that sink are going to get down to their feeding area. The ones that are right on top, like a streamer that's not going to sink, you're probably not going to have much luck with. But you can use a popper, and they'll go nuts over a popper sometimes, these big poppers. You had a little blurb there for Pugliese, and I fish with Pugliese myself. And
oh, yeah.
I think his fibers are great because they don't hold water, and you don't want something that holds a lot of water that's just going to, you know, crash bomb down to the bottom. Using flies that have some action in the tail, like a zonker strip, is great. If you put a anti-fouling piece of nylon under it so it won't catch on itself, and something that's got some action in it. And I don't use loop knots to get the action. I'd rather get it from the fly because a loop knot is a 70% knot. And if you look where the loop knots generally break, they break in the circle where the loop is because the eye of the hook sort of abrades it after a while. So if you're going to use loop knots, which is fine, you ought to retime about every fish. Retime.
Okay.
But colors, I change colors. If I'm not catching fish, I'm seeing fish, and I'm getting frank refusals on my kind of reddish that has Pugliese fiber on it, and it has Pugliese fiber on it, and it's kind of reddish. And they used to say a red fish like any color as long as it's orange. That's not true. If they're not hitting that, sometimes I'll go to the other extreme and I'll throw a white fly. If I'm fishing white and they're refusing, I'll go to black or purple. So make some drastic change because they may have been looking at bait fish that looks kind of like what you're fishing, and they said, I'm not going to take that. That doesn't look any better than what else. And you throw something on the table that they haven't seen, and they're going to go for it.
Okay.
You know, I've seen people catch them on houses. Fine, that's a screamer. And catching them on crab patterns, it doesn't make any difference. I don't use crab patterns because it's a pain in the butt to tie. If my fly take more than about 2 minutes to tie, I figure the fish is not sophisticated enough to tell the difference.
Okay.
So I think streamers overall, a streamer with a sinking, with either a lead eye or a bead chain eye is probably the best. And colors, you know, orange is always good. Chartreuse is good. If you want to walk on the wild side, use black, purple, and white.
Now, when you're
I'm sorry, go ahead. No, if you throw in some crystal flash or any of the tinsel stuff, I mean, I use Mylar that they throw on the Christmas trees. Christmas, you buy a handful of it for about 50 cents, and you don't have to go pay fly fish store prices for it.
Yeah,
we use a lot of that stuff.
The when you're fishing those streamers, and you say you're throwing it out in front of the redfish, and you're stripping it a couple, three times, letting it set a couple, three times. Now, are those streamers on the bottom? Are you fishing those on the bottom, or are you fishing them higher up?
It depends on the fish, and it depends on who's throwing at them. If I have a novice that has never fished a redfish before, I'll come and just put it on the bottom. Because when you pull it, it's going to come up a little bit off the bottom. If I'm fishing for them, I generally like for it to go down where I think the fish can see it. Like today, the fish we caught, the big fish, was probably in 2 feet of water. Then I saw it go down, and I said, this is about a foot deep, stripped it from here. Because he could see. I've seen so many people have the right strip, but in the wrong water column. That's probably the most common error that people make, is fishing in the wrong water column.
Interesting. Have you, Tom, have you changed anything with your phone here in the last 10 minutes?
I have not.
Are you holding it or anything? Okay. It was kind of breaking up on me, so that's why I was wondering. Still in the same spot?
I'm in the same spot. Maybe there's a leprechaun in it or something.
Okay. You sound okay now. It was kind of getting a little garbled there, but we'll go with it.
All right.
Jay Heyer in Gulfport asks, this is off the internet, he just wrote in, is the Terminator a reddish-brown pattern with some bardackle? You
that
know
sounds
this
like
guy?
A plant. That's what I call it, the Terminator. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It's it's got like orange or burnt orange buck tail with a couple of either reddish orange feathers that flare out from it, and then palm around it is Puglisi fiber, which is I like the gold, and it's got an eye on it. I deemed it the Terminator a number of years ago. Somebody's been snooping around my fly box.
So you don't know Jay Heyer then?
I know who Jay Heyer is. I mean, I know the name. Yeah, I know
okay.
Who Jay Heyer is.
Okay, well, that's who sent it in. So,
yeah, the Terminator is often imitated but seldom duplicated.
Okay. He also asked another question. He says, there are so many patterns that are said to work. How do you know which pattern to start with?
Well, if you're fishing with a guide, and I think guides are invaluable, especially with just the question you ask. You may be a better caster than him, but you're not a better fisherman in his backyard. So take advantage of what they say. Ask what they do, what the fish are eating. Ask them what their favorite fly is. If you have a favorite fly, start with it and see. You might have something that they haven't seen before that works. I mean, when we were in Brazil, I pulled out some stuff and said, they won't hit that. Yeah, right. They hit it. So, again, it's about presentation. It's not that much about imitation.
Yeah, and the guide knows from yesterday what's been working, right? And he wants to get you into some fish. So they're going to usually default to what's been working, right?
Yeah, I mean, I ask my buddies all the time, what did y'all catch your fish with today? I had three other guys that were out. One was out at the Chandelier Islands, and one was out at the Berry Islands, and we were out at the Bloodsy Marsh, and I called them all. I said, what were y'all fishing with? And one of them was fishing with purple, and one was fishing with chartreuse, and we were fishing with the Terminator. So and everybody caught some fish.
Fish, yeah. We've got another question in, kind of a follow-up question from Steve in California about your leader setup. He said, you mentioned a leader you tie for redfish 4 foot 40-pound plus 2.5 foot of 30-pound. Are your leaders that short for sight fishing? Don't we need a longer leader for better presentation?
No. Redfish are not leader shy, unless they're in Tampa Bay, where everybody's throwing at them. They're not leader shy. Redfish, you can hit them in the head, you can hit them in the tail, but you don't line them. If you line them, you let them swim out from under them. Don't strip across their back. But you need a heavy fly and a quick presentation. You need a short leader and you need a stout leader. Now, they make commercial leaders that are short, you know, 7.5 foot leader, but they're not really, really heavy. And again, like I said, I don't want to lose one because my tippet broke. So I make most of mine myself because I have an aversion of buying a $4.5 leader when I can buy a whole spool of Andy for $5 and I have enough leader material for 100 years. So I make my own. And, one of the things I think people do, and I've learned this over the years, is when you're making your leader, and this may be a little bit off the subject, you're always told to put them together with blood knots. Blood knots tend to fail more than you think they do. And I've gone almost exclusively to a double surgeon's. And the blood knot is basically a compression knot. And when it compresses right where the barrel of that, where you wrap them together, that's the weak point. And if you get a big fish on there, sooner or later you're going to break where you joined it together, where if you put 40 and 30 together, where the 40 and 30 came together. So that's just kind of my personal way of joining my leader together, is double surgeons.
Okay. Mark DiCarlo in Tampa, Florida, asked if you use any worm patterns. He says, I've been finding a lot of worms in their bellies.
Well, I mean, they eat. It's just like trout. I mean, San Juan worms are in every stream in the world. They're just different colors. And they are aquatic worms, sea worms that redfish eat, but they're generally the smaller ones, not the big fish, as they get older, they don't eat as many worms. But if you want to throw a worm pattern, you can. They make some of these tails now. A couple of companies make them. I know the dragon tail was one that they were making for a while. And that's kind of like a worm. It's long and skinny, but you know, a zonker strip will do the same thing. Mm-hmm. You just get a lot of action out of it. So that's kind of a gussied up worm, I guess. But I don't do a worm pattern per se.
Okay.
But there's no reason why it wouldn't work.
Okay. Peter in Lincoln, Nebraska wrote in and asked, have you seen any difference in redfish hookups using flies with or without UV materials? He said, I'd also love to know if you have a go-to searching pattern when the water is not suitable for sight fishing.
Well, first, I don't think they have any water in Nebraska, do they?
the Platte River, I think. Yeah,
I know. There's
it's very brown.
Yeah, I mean, I think any attractor pattern, anything you put in there, to me, improves your chance of hookup. So if you want to, you know, throw some flashaboo or crystal flash or something like that in them, yeah, I think that makes a difference. If I'm out fishing an area like around Kiowa in South Carolina and I haven't fished it before, I'm going to put on the fly that I catch fish down in Alabama with. And if I'm fishing by myself, if I'm fishing with a guide, I'm going to say, what do y'all use? And I'm going to steal some of his.
Right.
So if I'm just out there doing it and I'm not blind casting and I'm sight casting, I think you just go to the fly that you're most comfortable with. And most of the time, you're probably going to be successful.
Okay. He also asked about a go-to searching pattern when the water is not suitable for sight fishing. So you're blind casting?
Well,
same thing. Same answer.
That it depends on how hardcore you are. I personally don't fish much when I'm just throwing it out there and blind casting. If you were blind casting, I think in water that's not that suitable for sight casting, what are you trying to do? Okay, they can't see that well in there, so they're going to go mostly for something they can feel with their lateral lines. So I'm more likely to use a bigger fly. I'm more likely to put a loop knot on it at that point, although I'm not real fond of them. And sometimes I'll use a rattle in there. Also, if you're blind casting like that, one of the good ways to explore it is throw poppers on them, and because that'll get their attention. So you have to kind of, you know, pick your poison when you go to an area like that. The first thing you do is you call the fly shop and ask them what they're biting, and how do you fish this dark water here? Because, I mean, over in the Louisiana area, especially on the west side of the Mississippi, it can vary a lot in the color of the water. And I'm just not a big fan of false casting into dirty water or whatever.
It's a long day, right?
Find a pond. It's a long day. Yes, it's a long run for a short slide, as they say.
Yeah,
but a lot of people do it.
Yeah.
I think it makes more sense if you get over a big oyster bed, for example. You know that fish over there eating. So if you want to blind cast in there, we've had some really good success catching redfish over oyster beds. And you'll catch a lot of sheephead over them, too. And I have a bunch of guys that I played football with at North Carolina, and they come down every year in November to fish, and most of them are conventional fishermen. And we'll get over an oyster bed, and I'll be on the back with my fly rod, and they'll be on the front with their spinning rods, and I'm doing as well, if not better, than they are, because I can keep my fly in the water 75% of the time longer than they can, because they got to reel in every time they cast, and I don't.
Right. Yeah. Joe in Pennsylvania asked, do spoon flies work effectively for reds?
Absolutely. You know, then it gets down to what is a fly and what is a jig and
right. What's
the crossover. It's like a switch rod. Where does it really belong? Nowhere. But, yeah, these spoons, you know, Dupree spoons, everybody's heard of that. I make them out of beer cans, and I got a whole box full of them, and then I just kind of lost interest. But, yeah, you get a lot of action, a lot of flash for them, and redfish like flashy stuff. They
like
work
food.
Great for them.
Yeah,
like absolutely. Food. Well, I mean, what are the conventional fishermen fishing with for redfish? They're fishing with these big gold spoons.
Right.
So, yeah, it's nothing more than a Dupree spoon that you put on steroids that got used.
Yeah. Let's talk about some strategies and tactics a little bit. Roy in Orange County, California, asked another question. He says, can you describe your typical day sight casting for redfish in Alabama, from tackle preparation to favorite locations, best times, and cost of guide services? So what's it like a day out on the water there?
Like today on the water.
What time did you leave in the morning?
Oh, okay. You can't see the fish until the sun gets to a certain level. So it doesn't do any good to get out there at 5 o'clock in the morning. You're wasting your time. So we get out there about to our destination spot about 9 or 9:30, and then the angle of the sun you can see. So we like to get the sun behind your back. And if you're poling, you like to get the wind behind your back, but sometimes that's not possible. But you like to get the sun at the right angle, all right? So we get up at this morning and rig up two rods, rig them up, put them in the boat. Don't wait till you get out of there and wasting time. Rig them up with the fly, you know, one color and one the other. And I have two flats boats, and make sure you have the right, you know, ride out there, bay boats don't work where we fish. You can't get up in 4 inches of water, and sometimes you have to do that. You got to have you got to be able to see. So I have a standing cage on the front. It actually looks like a chair, and because you can get up and down on it easy, and it's got a padded back on it. And I have a trolling motor on the front too. And on the back, of course, I've got my polling platform, and I don't know how many people know what sissy bars are, but it's a cage up there. And if you think sissy bars are for sissies, I'll show you some good pictures of people who have fallen on the prop and they step off. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a macho thing that the young whippersnappers, they say, I don't use sissy bars. You step off on the prop, buddy, and you'll use one. But I can sit up there and I can pole and I can see. And it makes a big difference, a little bit of elevation on the boat to be able to see. Some people use coolers on the front and that sort of thing, but I think you step off of coolers. And that's another thing. If you fall in the water, go into the water. Don't jump into the boat or you get hurt that way. So we go out there, and we got particular areas that we go to that we've named that really don't have names. If you get stuck out there, you could call your buddy and say, I'm in Picnic, or I'm in LEI, or I'm in this or that, and they know where you are. So we get out there and to where we want to go, and the first thing we do a little scouting, just running really shallow. I have a jack plate on my boat, so it pulls the whole engine up. You can go real shallow. And people think redfish are real spooky with motors and noise and all. They hear motors all the time. I've had a redfish run into my trolling motor one time and bent the shaft. So they hear all that. What they don't like are acute changes in sound where it goes high, low, or running over shells and all. But I catch them all with the trolling motor all the time. So once we see some fish, then we'll get on the pole and start getting serious. And getting close to them and all. So we'll pole around in an area, and if we don't see anything pretty quick, we'll go to another area. We move a lot, and we may cover 50 miles.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
In a day. You know, but sometimes we'll run from one area over to the other. We're not poling 50 miles. Probably cute.
Right.
But
one way or the other.
I use the longest pole because then I don't have to keep pulling it up and down. I have a 24-foot pole for my one of my boats, and it's kind of like a Hell's Bay. It's a Gordon, and Tom Gordon was the chief hull designer for Hell's Bay until he moved out and went on down to Isla Mirada. But it's a shallow water boat, and it's easy to push because if you go out in these shallow areas, sooner or later, you're going to have to get out and push. My footprints are all over the Biloxi Marsh. If a bay boat won't get where we get, so they're not going to catch the fish that we catch. So we do that. We get on the pole and catch the fish and pole around different areas. After a while, you get to the point where you can look into a pond that may be 20 acres or so, and you can say, I bet that bank over there holds fish. It has sort of an aura to it. Then you get over there and there's nothing. And you go, wait a minute, that looks great. So sometimes there's no rhyme or reason why they're on this bank and not on that bank. And that's one of those unknowns. If we knew, man, we'd be world records every time. So right. That's what we do. And we generally come back when you get flat light. And flat light was when the sun starts going down a little bit, and you get that glare, and then you can't see down. So
water,
we may
yeah.
go and fish from 9:30 to 2:30 or 3 in the afternoon, and it's over.
Yeah.
Then, unless you just want to go out there and pound the water.
Right.
And yeah. That's okay. Kind of our typical day.
Okay. When you're how do you read the water and spot redfish in different conditions or environments? What are you looking for? I mean, can you clearly see the fish?
Well, first thing I look for the clarity of the water, because, I mean, that's key. If you can't, and I make sure that we're going out and it's not a 70% cloud cover, because you're not going to see them then either. So we look at the sky and we look at the water. Then we look at the bank and see what it looks like. Is it a gradual sloping bank or is it a chop bank? Then we look into the water and see what's under there. Is it grass? Is it shells? Is it holes? Is it ruts or whatever? And all that has a lot to do with where your redfish are. And like we said before, they don't like chop banks and they don't like a bottom that looks like somebody's plowed it. They like smooth bottoms. They like, because they're just gliding along there. And they use that bottom for spawning because they use their bladders and they rub it against the bottom. And that's why they call them red drum, because they're drumming and they're calling their mate in. And you can hear them doing it. And also they can root around better with a smooth bottom. And that's where you see the tailing fish, where they're wagging their tails at you.
You just talked about the environment and the conditions. What about seeing the fish? You know, I've looked for all kinds of different fish, from trout to tarpon to bonefish to permit to what, you know, and they all look, you've got to be able to, I don't know, you have to learn to see them. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I totally 100% agree with you. When I go bonefish and I can't see them the first 2 days, my brain has to be getting gear. And when I take people redfishing, I can see them because I look at them every day. And that's the value of having a good guide. Same thing with tarpon. I mean, you fished enough tarpon, but you can see them coming across, and your buddy says, "I don't know where it is." And that gets down to having a good guide, because nothing bugs me more than somebody say, "Fish at 235. I said, "Wait a minute, come on." To me, it's straight ahead, behind you, right, 3 o'clock, left, 9 o'clock. There's no other direction. Don't tell me it's 11:30. If I'm confused, I'll hold my rod out and say, where's the fish? Tell me which way to move it. Now I see it. When I'm looking for redfish, oftentimes you'll see one of three things. You'll see a dark shadow in the fall because they're real gold, and underwater they'll look almost black. Number two, they'll roll on their side sometimes when they're drumming, so you'll see a big white, it looks like a gar or something. And in the spring, off the pier down at the beach where we have a house, I'll look out at night at 1 o'clock in the morning, and the lights are shining out, you see these white shadows coming by. You know that's a monster out there. He's ready to eat. The other thing that you see with them, of course, and people like to talk about tailing redfish and all, you'll see their tails come up occasionally and because they're rooting around down there. And if you look at a spot and it starts moving, you know it's a fish, because you can never be wrong for casting at it. You can never be wrong for setting the hook. And I can tell you how many times I say, "Is that a fish? Is that a fish?" Dang, that was a fish. I said, "Let's cast for him."
Right,
but
right.
You learn, your eyes become accustomed to it. And that's why, again, why a guide is so important, because he can see them better than you can. He's looking at them every day. And,
yeah.
But that's what I do. I try to look for things that are moving.
Chuck in Placerville, California asked, "Do you see difference in sight fishing for redfish versus other species like trout or carp, for example?"
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of difference in them. I mean, if you look at, okay, say trout, for example. Basically, people fish trout three different ways. They fish nymphs, they fish them subsurface, and occasionally they fish them on top. Well, if you look at redfish, again, they're looking down. That last 6 inches before they hit the bottom, that's their feeding zone right there. Anything out of that, you may catch them, but not otherwise. If you're looking at tarpon, and people don't realize this, tarpon are not going to dive down 10 feet to get your fly. They've got a strike zone as big as a basketball in front of them, and it has to be, if you look at their eyes, they're so big, it has to be where they can see them. If it's right in front of them, oftentimes they can't see them. If it's a little bit off to the side, they can. So that type of or that species requires a different presentation. If you fish in, you know, like we're fishing taimen in Mongolia, those fish only hit a fly on the swing. They don't hit anything stripped in front of them. They don't hit it on the swing because it slows down and it dips down. And as it comes around, the current makes it come up again. So it moves, obviously, like a predator that they're after. So I think, it gets down to listening to what your guide is saying.
Yeah,
how to fish them.
And look where the mouth and the eyes are, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. When we were fishing last week in the Amazon, I got up on the polling platform, and he was saying, you know, let it sit, strip it 2 inches, let it sit. And I couldn't see it, and all of a sudden, wham, you know, this 15-pound peacock goes aerial, you know, right in front of you. And I said, Lucas, how did you see that fish? He said, I look at them all the time.
Yeah. They probably stand out like a red hat, you know, in the water to the guides, you know, and we're
And after you've been down there a while, just like anything, like fishing the Bahamas for bonefish, your eyes get kind of keyed in on it, and then you can recognize them. But, you know, I don't pretend to be able to see them the first day or the second day, but after a while you can, because you see what they're looking at. They'll say, you see that silver little area over there? That's not a fish. Look at the brown area beside it. That's a fish. You go, oh, okay.
Yeah. Mark DiCarlo in Tampa, Florida, wrote in. He says, I have no problem landing redfish, and no stealth is key to get a good shot at them in clear water, less than 30 inches. It seems to me that every fish is an individual, and some eat by leading them 5 feet and others by 15 feet. Is it more about presentation than fly pattern, or do you think it's a combination? What kind? And then, well, you already talked about the retrieve, so.
Well, I mean, I think he's absolutely right, fishing down there. Sometimes it's 5 feet from, sometimes it's not. And I think it's absolutely probably 95% is presentation, because I've just seen too many different flies. I mean, if one pattern was working, everybody would be selling that pattern. So, you know, it tells you that nobody's got the right answer. And whatever works for you.
And we also...
Their fishery is a little tougher down there in Tampa area because they get a lot more pressure than we do. So you do have to use longer leaders, you know, and maybe different flies. And I've fished several those areas down there. It's different. It's different.
Yeah. Well, Tom, it's time to wrap things up here. Time went by fast. What can I say?
I would leave you with one thing. Set the hook. Just set the hook. When in doubt, set the hook. You'd rather lose him on the hook set than when he gets to the boat.
And I take it you're strip setting, right?
That's true.
Yeah. No trout sets, right?
That's true. Absolutely.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Well, hang tight with me because we're going to give away a few prizes here. I want you to help me out and ask a question of these folks. But we're going to come back and give away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and one-year membership to Trout Unlimited and also a book from Stackpole Books. So hang tight, folks, and I'll be right back. The Bonefish and Tarpon Trust works very hard to safeguard the future of our beloved flats fisheries. From protecting spawning sites threatened by unsustainable fishing pressure to securing historic funding to restore Florida's Everglades and estuaries. Thanks to their members, they've expanded their conservation to the Bahamas, Belize, and Mexico. There's still much more work to be done, and they need your help. With your support, they can ensure that the flats fishery is healthy and sustainable now and for generations to come. Visit btt.org and become a member of the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust today. Again, that's btt.org. Just a quick reminder to everyone before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. If you can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show, says, what did you think of the show? Just click on the link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. So now it's time to give away a few prizes. And the winners for our drawings are randomly selected from our show's registration database. And if you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do for the next show. And you don't want to miss a chance at winning some of these great prizes. If you are one of the lucky winners, we'll contact you after the show and collect your information so that we can deliver your prize to you. So first, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. And to learn more about FFI, go to flyfishersinternational.org. Great organization to support and be part of. As Tom talked about earlier, he's a certified fly casting instructor for FFI, and you can be one too. In fact, you might hit Tom up to be your mentor. So anyway, great organization. And let's see here. My database fired up here. And it looks like our winner for the FFI membership is Jay Heyer, who asked a couple questions tonight in Mississippi. So, Jay, congratulations. You have yourself a membership to Fly Fishers International. Now we'll give away a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. And to learn more about Trout Unlimited, go to TU.org and check them out, too. Another great organization to support our fisheries. And our winner for that is Philip Richer in Florida. So congratulations, Philip, and hope you enjoy your membership with Trout Unlimited. Now we'll give away, let me clear my queue here, a book. We still have questions coming in, Tom. Too many questions, not enough time. We'll give away a book courtesy of Stackpole Books. And again, like I said, if you get this answer correct, then I'll send you a list of the books I have available, and you can pick one, and we'll get it sent out to you. So the question is going to be down in Tom Dempsey's part of the world and his waters down there in Alabama and that area, what are the months that the redfish are spawning? What are the spawning months from what to what? So if you give me that right answer, then you will win a book from Stackpole Books. So let's see what we got here. It takes him a second to hear this, Tom, and then to respond, because there's a slight delay in the broadcast. And but I'm checking to see if we can't find a winner out there. So, all right.
Roger, let me throw something in. If anybody does have any questions after the program's over, they can feel free to call me on, and I'll be glad to answer them. And they can look on Gulf Coast Fly Fishing School and get my phone number, or I can give it to you now. I don't mind giving my number.
Sure. Go ahead if you'd like.
I'm at area code 251-648-7451. It's 251-648-7451.
There you go, folks. I mean, you don't get offers like that all the time. Obviously, Tom knows his stuff on redfish, so I would take him up on it if you're planning on going down there. Thank you so much, Tom. And I think we got a winner, Tom. I've got an answer of August to December. Is that correct?
That sounds good. I was top of the class.
Stephen Sykes, Silver Spring, Maryland. Stephen Sykes. So
he doesn't have any redfish up there in Maryland. They only got stripers up there.
Well, a lot of people like to travel, you know. So do you. So you gotta.
That's right.
You gotta go where fishing is.
Yeah, more power to him.
Yeah. Stephen, if you will send me your shipping address, you can use the same form that you answered the question to send me your shipping address. I have your email address and your name here, so send that over to me, and we'll get that book sent. I'll get the list sent out to you, and we'll take care of you there. Thanks, everybody, for playing and paying attention. We appreciate it. And, Tom, appreciate you so much for being with us tonight and sharing your breadth of knowledge. It's incredible.
Well, I enjoyed it. I appreciate you asking me.
Yeah. Well, glad to have you. And maybe we talk again about some other type of fishing that you enjoy doing. I'd love to do it. So,
absolutely.
All righty. Well, hopefully all of you have found our podcast archive on our website. If you haven't, just look for the link on the top line of our menu. In that archive, you'll find all of our past shows, over 390 shows. which you can search by a keyword like redfish or trout or tarpon or, Alabama or, whatever you want to search for, you'll probably find a show that we've done on it. So go ahead and check it out. I'm sure you'll be surprised and excited about what you find there. Our next broadcast will be on March 6th at 7 p.m. Mountain Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, I'm going to be interviewing Dave Zielinski. And our topic for the show will be cicada madness. Dave has been tracking down periodical cicada emergences and in an effort to figure out their mystery and the fish that hunt and devour them for the past 20 years. If you'd like to zero in on one of those epic emergences, tune in and learn from Dave about the timing, fish techniques, and patterns that you'll need to crack code. So if you want to add that to your calendar, just click on that calendar link below Dave's picture on our homepage, and that'll add it to your favorite calendar, and you'll be all set. So we'd like to thank Fly Fishers International, Trout Unlimited, Stackpole Books, Lee's Ferry Anglers, Ugly Bug Fly Shop, and Enrico Puglisi Flies for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com, and make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.